BBC Six Music Podcasts.
Six Music.
This is a free download from the BBC.
Find out more at bbc.co.uk/sixmusic.
And now, Adam and Joe.
How does the rest of that go?
I don't know. I've forgotten how it goes.
And then, whoosh, lamp.
It's punched in the face. Shut up!
Shut it!
You stupid computer animated nobbo!
Bank Pons!
Can I say nobbo?
Yeah.
It's fine.
Come on, podcast listeners. You get special close-to-the-edge language.
Yeah.
Hey, this is Adam.
This is Joe. Welcome to our weekly podcast of the highlights of our BBC Six Music show that's broadcast between 9 and noon every week on BBC Six Music.
How are we doing on the charts there, Joe?
What do you mean? Which charts?
I mean, you're the chart watcher for the podcast.
I love to watch the charts.
Right?
Yeah, that's true, I am. I do look at the podcast charts.
Last time
iTunes.
I looked, we were languishing.
Well, we've been off for the summer, but we're back into the top 20.
Top 20, though.
You know what I got excited about?
What?
Last year, when the show was on a roll, its position in the iPlayer chart.
Oh, yeah.
Because sometimes it would be at number 2 in the Listen Again chart on the iPlayer. Now, no sign of it on any
around.
iPlayer charts.
Nah. People suddenly understood that they could listen to other programs. So they took advantage of that feature. But listeners, come on, we're not complaining. We're very glad that you've downloaded this podcast. You're the faithful, you're the true, the hardcore. And what a podcast we've got for you this week. It was a very enjoyable show, beautiful sunny day here in London town. And we just jump about hither and thither with the features, the clips, the anecdotes. Oh, I'm just rambling.
You're doing very well.
I'm just
sitting back and chilling out.
Yeah. Go on, tease some things in the show.
Well, we did a Text the Nation.
Yeah, we did.
That was a good one. And don't forget, if you've got thoughts about Text the Nation, you can stick them on our blog.
Made up
for
jokes.
Our Cinema Going Manifesto. Some controversial made up jokes that might result in the first public flogging on the BBC for how long?
2 weeks.
Long time.
22 years.
Yeah.
There you go. And we had lots of other exciting bits and bobs. Adam did a bit of audiobook reading. I played some amazing clips from an extraordinary BBC Three programme. But, you know, all this stuff's coming up. So, really, it's a complete waste of time and energy to tease it in this manner.
Yeah, that's true, isn't it?
It's true. But you put me up to it.
Sorry, mate. Let's get on with it, shall we? Without further ado.
Sorry, mate. It's just more fun to say that in an Australian accent.
It's true. Say the word
sincere.
Mate. Come on, mate.
There's something about the Australian accent in general that just makes everything a bit more casual and light-hearted and uncynical.
Don't you think that the creatures from the forthcoming James Cameron epic Avatar look somehow Australian?
Well, they're very healthy. That's true. And
they've
they
got beads in their hair and stuff, and I'm sure they surf.
Do you think you will find them working in bars in London this time next year?
Almost certainly, blue creatures.
Yeah, serving
with big,
drinks.
Wide apart
in
eyes.
Isles Court.
And they, because what are their accents like in Avatar?
Oh man, I can't remember. I was so bedazzled by the three dimensionality of it.
You've seen a 15-minute trailer, right?
Yeah,
they should
I think
be
they
Australian.
Were fairly normal.
All right, mate. Hey, mate, what are you doing with my spaceship? No, what's that accent? I don't know what that is.
It's gone a little bit New Zealand because it's a little crisper.
Sort of New Zealand mixed with a bit of South African, I think. I don't know. But it would be nice, I think, if they spoke like that, the Avatar people.
I think it would be terrific. Well, when it comes out, we can help them along by redubbing some scenes.
That's true.
It improves it.
That's a good project. Listen, sorry. Let's get underway. This is the podcast this week. Enjoy.
The main thing is sorry.
Watch out. It's Adam and Joe coming from space to your brain. They got a little pack of highlights from the Six Music Show for you to hear again.
They got rid of all of the music and the bits were incredibly crappy. So now there ain't a whole lot left, but hopefully enough to keep you happy. Here we go.
Hey, good morning, listeners. We're Adam and Joe. I'm Joe.
I'm Adam.
And welcome to Britain's top political phone-in show. For the next 3 hours, your chance to let off steam over the issues of the day. Gordon Brown, can we still trust him? Why can't he be straight with the country? Alistair Darling, couldn't Britain really spend its way out of recession?
Alex Salmond, thanks for sending us down the river!
Swine flu, mass pandemic or mass panic?
Absolutely.
All the issues of the day for the next 3 hours. Your chance to let off some steam!
Plus the Millennium Dome. What are we doing with this white elephant?
White elephant? Or elephant? Or actual elephant?
So get in, let off some steam, get angry. That's what we want.
It's, not, a, it's not. It's not.
Isn't
it's
it?
Not, no, it's not a political phone-in show.
I thought it was. I thought you were saying it was. I thought that was the whole point of what you were saying was that part of our rebrand...
Gordon Brown.
Yeah.
That's all.
Go on.
Gordon Brown.
That's all. You just have to say it like that.
You just have to phone in and say...
Gordon Brown.
Gordon Brown. Yeah, that's what it's going to be like.
Swine flu.
3 hours of that. Not no music. Just phone in every now and again. We don't even have adverts as well. It's just going to be angry people on the
hardcore
phone.
Ranting.
Hardcore ranting. Remember, the 5th of September. Now it's no longer so hot. Because I thought, you know, they've got one for the 5th of November.
Yes.
Remember the 5th
of
November.
And it's cooling down.
Gunpowder, treason and plot.
That's
right?
Good, man. Well done.
I've got some other ones for like the other 5ths of the months as well. 5th of June. Do you want to hear it?
Yes.
Remember, baboon. It's the 5th of June soon. Probably it will be quite hot.
Yeah. The thing you're missing is that...
What?
I think the November the 5th one was because it was...
Gunpowder, treason and plot.
Yeah, fireworks nights.
Yeah, so I've got the rhyme.
Yeah, but there was an event for the rhyme to commemorate.
It will be hot.
Was there something baboon related on the 5th of June?
That was mainly for the rhyme.
Right.
But it's aimed at baboons. All right, how about this? 5th of March. Remember the larch on the 5th day of March. The tree has been growing a lot.
Now that's touching. That's very sweet.
Well, it's poetic, isn't it?
Yes, it is poetic.
Remember the
it?
Larch. Because people tend to forget about the larch in March. You know, they're still excited about... They're getting over Christmas and the New Year festivities and stuff, and they're still adjusting to the New Year.
Do one for December. What rhymes with December?
Remember, the 5th of December.
Oh.
Soon there'll be presents. And
cake.
Tot.
Tot!
Like a tot of whiskey.
Adam's really great and he's wonderful. Joe is really, really, really brilliant.
They're fantastic.
But which one is the best?
It's Adam. This is Adam and Joe here on BBC Six Music. I wonder if Black Squadron are tickling each other. Do you think it's like a kids' show, this... It's basically like a toddler's program.
It's Saturday morning, but tickling isn't necessarily a childish thing. It can be dangerous.
That's right.
I mean, if you were driving in a car there and someone started tickling you on the command of this show...
That was absolutely lethal.
...could have been fatal.
So what are you saying?
So I'm saying that's not for kids, is it? Death.
Oh, I see.
They can't handle it.
You're saying that if a commando was to do it, it's a very different kettle of cod.
Exactly. Tickling is something that real squaddies are trained to do. You can disarm a terrorist with a carefully placed tickle.
Absolutely you can.
Tickle them in the right place and they're forced to drop the gun and chortle with joy.
I wouldn't be surprised, on a serious note, if they used tickling in places like Guantanamo.
As a torture?
Yeah.
Well, that's different. That's
tickle
dark.
Torture.
That's dark.
I'm saying this is a serious phone-in show, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. You're right. When you're a child and someone tickles you and then doesn't stop.
Yeah.
You can nearly suffocate. It's awful.
It's horrible.
But I'd like to see in a Bond film, James Bond work his way through a room of baddies just with carefully placed tickling.
A nice bit of tickling.
Don't you think?
You know, where's the best place to tickle someone? Because the obvious thing is to go for under the armpits there.
The ribs. It's the ribs, side. I think.
You reckon?
A very sudden, you launch a hand suddenly towards the ribs.
Yeah.
And that's guaranteed to get any party started.
Have you never tried doing the thigh tickle?
The thigh pinch is effective.
The inner thigh. Go in for the inner thigh and really root around in the inner thigh
there.
What?
Well, you have to do that with someone you're intimate with.
Yeah.
Do you? Who are you doing that to?
I don't know anyone, really.
Did you do that to Tom York?
Get a big reaction out of... You know, I haven't done it to Tom York.
We should tickle celebrities.
Well, I did.
That could be our new thing.
I did tickle Johnny Greenwood from Radio.
Did you?
I tickled him on his buttocks.
Did you?
I reached around and I grabbed his...
He's probably working on a song about that.
I grabbed his buttocks and I did a little tickle and he looked appalled.
Mm.
I mean, I really regretted doing it.
Did you?
Yeah.
Why did you do it?
Because I was overexcited.
Really?
Yeah.
Was he in a happy mood or was he...
He seemed to be in a happy mood, which is why I thought maybe it would be a good thing to do.
I think the misconception is that tickling someone can make an unhappy person happy.
That is true.
It doesn't work that way. It makes them angry.
But listen, under normal circumstances, tickling the buttocks gets good results.
If you come anywhere near my buttocks...
Well, I
will be so
you're
happy.
A good example of a person that I wouldn't feel comfortable doing it with.
Really?
It wouldn't occur to me.
There's a lot to tickle here.
To tickle you.
There's a whole lot of tickling. That's what confuses people. They don't know where to start.
Right.
Yeah.
Where would you like to
there's
be
There's miles of me.
I mean, no one really likes being tickled, do they? And my daughter, I've noticed, my young daughter absolutely loathes
tickled.
It. And
little babies love being tickled, though.
Not my daughter. She's
really?
Fed up with it, yeah.
Really?
She looks at me with a look of utter
get
disgust.
Get off!
What are you doing? Ah! Get off! That's the only word she can say. She can't...
In that very low voice as well.
Go on, get off!
Yeah, a little groovy break. Now back to work.
We won't go on about Radiohead anymore. Suffice to say that it was a wonderful show at Reading last weekend. Thanks also to everyone who came along to my show that I did there. Many Black Squadron members came along, and there was a very loud bit of Stevenage before I went on, which mystified the MC. He'd never heard of Stephen or our show. And when various members of the crowd started shouting, "Stephen!" He said he was confused. He didn't know what the hell was going on. He said, "What's Stephen? What happens if I shout Stephen?" And they said, "Go on, shout Stephen." So the MC finally shouted Stephen, and there was a very loud, "Just coming!" And if you don't know what that means, listeners, then let me explain. That's just something that you can shout if you want to identify other people that listen to this show. If you shout Stephen in a crowded place and someone shouts "just coming" back at you, then you know that they are also listeners to this program.
I got a couple of shouts in the street during the week.
Oh, yeah?
On Oxford Street.
Did you respond?
Well, you know, I was walking down a very crowded Oxford Street.
Yeah.
And from somewhere in the crowd came, "Stephen!" And it was a bit like a sort of a 50s horror film.
Uh-huh.
I didn't know where it had come from or who'd said it. When I looked around, all I could see were blank faces.
Yeah.
So I was too confused. I missed the moment.
You shouldn't look around even. It should just
immediately come out.
Yeah, just coming!
And another one I got in... I was walking through Soho and a young man walked past me and went, "Ah, Stephen," like that. And I was again so surprised. I think I went, "Hey," or "Hi," possibly, at best. But I'm no good at it.
You are not.
I can't respond to it.
Listen, I was in an airport toilet.
Really?
And there was a Stephen from inside the cubicle.
Really?
Next to mine.
From inside the urinal?
No, in a cubicle. Couldn't even see where it had come from. I just heard from within the cubicle. I was washing my hands. I hear, "Stephen!" So I gave him a "just coming," you know, but it was pretty weird for me and everyone else in the lavatory at the time. They just thought, wow, this is a special new type of cottaging that's going on in the airport. I'll be back later. Anyway,
I've got to practice. We've got to figure out some way that I can get up to speed, you know, sharpen up my Stephen responses.
You really do.
A sort of a training camp.
Stephen! Look, you see, you can't even do it on air.
Try again.
Stephen! You know, just coming. Coming is fine. If you're embarrassed about the "just coming," you just keep coming. Something like that. Uh-huh. Can't do it. Last bit of Radiohead-related nonsense. Don't forget that there is a so-called interview with myself and Tom York available to see, exclusive to our BBC Six Music blog. You can check that out right now. The blog can be found at bbc.co.uk/blogs/Adam and Joe.
And don't forget, you can just email us about general bits and bobs. The blog tends to be targeted comments, doesn't it? Arranged under themes, you know. But if you've just got general wiffle waffle that you want to send our way, then the email address is adamandjoe.sixmusic@bbc.co.uk. You know, we love your emails.
Made up jokes and stuff. We might have a few made up jokes that we've accumulated over the summer.
Maybe.
Later in the show. Talking. One of the other people that was lurking around at Reading, right, was Daniel Radcliffe and Rupert Grint, Harry Potter, and his buddy Ron Johns.
Ron Weasley.
Yeah. They were wandering around there, and they were sort of disguised. They had crazy hats and stuff on and goggles and things like that.
Stop them from being mobbed by muggles.
Yeah, but it didn't really, because the muggles were absolutely swamping them and taking pictures. They were really nice, though. They seemed, they were very smiley and up for having their pictures taken and stuff like that.
I like them both. I've especially got a soft spot for Grinty.
Yeah, do you?
Yeah, I think he's Malcolm McDowell for the noughties.
Yeah. Do you think he's got the longevity there? Is he going to last?
Well, it depends on his career choices. He could either be Malcolm McDowell, or he could be the guy from Confessions of a Window Cleaner. He could go either way.
Yeah.
His choices so far, Thunderpants.
That was very young, though.
It was very young. And he did a driving school one. It's early days for both of them.
Very early days.
They're very young. Let's not judge them.
There was a very snippy interview with him in some men's
with Grinty.
Mag. Yeah, in FHM or something like that.
Really?
Where they were basically, the whole thrust of the thing was like, you're washed up. You're never going to have a career. And they were really giving him a hard time about it. I thought he dealt with it very manfully in the article. I wish him all the best. Anyway, we went to see Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
I haven't seen it yet.
Me and my boys, they were absolutely desperate to see it, even though they're pretty young. I mean, 5 and 7, you know, and it's a 12. So it was up to me as the parent to make the call. And I was a little bit worried it would be too scary. Actually, it wasn't too scary. What it was too boring.
It's long, isn't it?
It's
how long
really
is it?
Really long.
It's two and a quarter
it's
hours?
2.5 years. It's 2.5
really?
Hours. 2.5 hours. I mean, I would be bored in any film that lasted that long. You know what I mean? And the thing is that it's David Yates, is it the director?
Yes.
He's got a lot of character work going on in there. And they are really, I mean, hooray, there's some great character development. But that's a little bit lost on the under 10s. And my own fault for taking them. You know, it is a 12A, certainly. Perhaps the 12-year-olds.
What was happening? What were your kids doing? How did they,
well,
show their boredom?
It started off very early on with one of them getting some popcorn lodged in his throat, which happens quite a lot. I forgot that it happened last time. I've just got to stop buying them popcorn. But about 10 minutes in, right, there was a tap on my shoulder. Ah, I got popcorn in my throat. So I was like, okay, have some, here, drink a little bit of
no Heimlich.
Fizzy pop. No, because it was, you know, do you ever get that? It's a little shard of popcorn and you can feel
it
stuck
down there.
I
don't really like popcorn. Don't have it.
Right. Well, that's a good reason not to, because very often you can get a little shard lodged there. And you can feel it.
I much prefer to eat shards.
Do you?
Big bag Cadbury of shards. Cadbury shards.
Delicious. Chocolate covered shards.
Razor sharp shards, yeah.
Wow. No, he just goes for the popcorn and the shards come off. And then so right the way through the film, he was just making like loads of noise as well. In the quiet bits, all you could hear was. Like he wasn't choking. He was just trying to dislodge the shard. So I felt bad. I kept on saying, shh, try and do it a little bit more quietly. And I had to buy him a hot dog to see if that would dislodge it and stuff. And
did you not? Was he disturbing other viewers?
I would say so.
You should have taken him outside.
Well, what was I going to do, though? There was two of them. I didn't want to just totally
that's true.
Disrupt
that's
the true. Whole thing. I couldn't leave the other guy on his own there, the other guy, my son.
That other guy. Meanwhile, that little guy that follows me around.
Yeah, the weird short guy. Meanwhile, the other guy, right, is bored out of his mind because he can't figure out what's going on. The only time he's perking up is when they do the broomstick battles. What's the sport game called?
Quidditch,
right? So he perks up a little bit when the Quidditch starts and when there's some extreme wand action going on. But apart from that, during all the plot unfolding moments, of which there are many, he was absolutely bored out of his mind. And he turned round and he was facing the wrong way in his seat and he was bashing his head against the back of the seat.
You and I used to do that as a demonstration of boredom as teenagers.
Well, he was doing it sincerely.
Wow, that's advanced.
And I was saying, man, do you want to leave? Because we can leave. If it's too boring, we can leave. And he's like, no, I like it. I really like it. Let's stay. So at 2.5 hours of this, we must have been driving the people behind us mental.
Was it quite full in there?
It was relatively full, yeah. And in Norwich as well, it's a very respectful audience you get. There's no mobile phone calls and talking and stuff. People are really nice and well-behaved. So, and we were the worst-behaved people there, spilling popcorn, coughing and splattering, bashing heads against the back of the seats. It was pretty bad.
Text the nation. Text the nation.
What if I don't want to?
Text the nation.
But I'm using email. Is that a problem?
It doesn't matter. Text.
So one of my favourite little blogs that I like to visit is called Ultra Culture, run by a young man called Charlie Lyne. It's a very good opinionated movie blog, and he's done on it this week a manifesto for cinema going. And he makes some quite good points about what gets annoying about cinemas. One of his points is the following. Screens in cinemas should always be 70% as wide as the auditorium. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's quite specific with his commands on the blog Ultra Culture. But there he's complaining about, you know, you pay money for a cinema and then you get into a room that's smaller than your front room.
Yeah.
With a screen that's only just larger than your telly. Has that ever happened?
Yes, you get filtered off down the sides. It's like you go to a cinema complex and you think, wow, they've got 20 screens here. And you realise that about 10 of them are, yes, as you say.
Or all of them sometimes. Right. Like they used to be a giant screen and then little ones, but the giant screens have become uneconomical.
Uh-huh.
So they've sliced and diced them up and often they're all really kind of tiny.
Plus you get sound bleeding across from some of the other
yes.
screens in those things as well.
So anyway, we were going to, with your help, listeners, put together a sort of a 10-point cinema manifesto, and we're going to take this manifesto and we're going to distribute it to all major cinema chains. And if they don't obey the laws,
yeah.
then everyone who listens to this show will boycott those chains.
Yeah, it's
right?
going to be it's more of a case, less of a case of Odeon and more of a case of Odium.
Nice,
Oscar Deutsch, eat our manifesto.
Nice.
Was his name Oscar Deutsch?
Yeah, Oscar Deutsch entertains our nation.
Yeah,
I think that's what
exactly.
Odeon stood for.
Take this, Oscar Deutsch!
And maybe that's going too far. Maybe that's against the big British castle rules. We can't encourage listeners to boycott any kind of company, but we can mobilise Black Squadron.
That's right.
I mean, Black Squadron are beneath the radar. They're above the law.
What are Black Squadron going to do exactly?
Something involving toast and tickling. And eggs in their mouths.
They're going to go and tickle Oscar Deutsch.
I don't know. They're going to go loaded with all their various bits of Black Squadron equipment. They're going to do some hideous subterfuge on cinemas. Anyway, so text us on 64046 with things that you'd like fixed about the cinema. Here's one of the things I'd like fixed. I think they should bring back boxes. In the old days, boxes in theatres were for very posh people, right? You'd have your own little sort of balcony,
yeah.
private area. I think they should be soundproofed and glass, and they should put idiots in them. Do you know what I mean?
But then the idiots would have to pay extra, wouldn't they?
Yeah, but, well, maybe the idiot boxes, which is what they'd be called, would be cheaper.
That's an interesting angle, though. You're putting the idiots in the exclusive area.
Yeah, so that they're soundproofed, so that they can misbehave and text and chat and stuff and moon or puke on the inside of the glass
uh-huh.
as much as they want.
Yeah.
They'd be behind the civilised people.
Have you seen much mooning in the cinema recently?
Well, I'm just thinking if you put someone in a glass box, they tend to moon. Either that or press the boobs up against it.
Yeah.
It's a natural human response.
It's a nice thing, though. They should have a separate box for that.
Well, you could turn the other way in your seat, like your son.
Yes, exactly. Hey, speaking of which, Joe is just checking the ratings regulations.
Yeah, someone sent us in a little text pertaining to Adam's story about his kids in the cinema. It's from Chris in Stirling. Dear Adam and Joe, sorry to say that the minimum age for a 12A film is 8. Parental discretion only applies to kids aged 8 to 12.
I didn't know.
The authorities have been informed. We'll be in touch in due course.
Flipping heck.
So Count Buckley's is going to be clanked up.
I'm a lawbreaker, taking my kids to see films they shouldn't see, like Harry Potter
it's
and the Half-Blood Prince.
Isn't it?
Is it?
Yeah, NSPCC.
Wow, you really took it to an extreme
Well, you've
place.
Abused your children's imagination by showing them dragons, scary dragons, at too young an age.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They didn't have any nightmares, though. They just slept very soundly.
My most treasured cinematic memories are films that hideously traumatised me at a young age.
Mm,
I tell you what else I'd get rid of in cinema going.
Yeah.
Pick and mix.
Why?
And
what's your problem with that?
Well, those pick and mix bags.
Right.
They're so noisy. They're so big. They're like sleeves. You have to plunge most of your arm into them to get to the sweets.
What do you do?
And they're very crinkly.
Right.
Cloth bags.
Cloth bags.
Silky or cloth bags.
Hessian sacks.
Yeah, that don't make any noise when you go for a sweet. No wrapped sweets.
Mm-hmm.
No cellophane. Mm. All sweets served in cloth bags.
Yeah. And
it's the kind of thing I'm looking for.
So presumably you've got a big popcorn problem then, haven't you?
With people crunching popcorn?
Yeah.
A little bit, I suppose, but it's traditional popcorn.
What about slurping of drinks?
Doesn't bother me, really.
No.
When you get down to the bottom of the cup, you mean? Hoovering
yeah.
up the dregs.
And people sloshing around their ice.
I like sloshing.
I mean, it's not a big problem.
Not a big problem.
What are you eating when you go? Do you take a snack in there? Or
like minstrels.
Yeah.
Yeah. And some water.
Nice bit of water.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Noises. Beeping noises.
So listen, do you, Adam Buxton, do you watch a lot of BBC Three?
You know what? I don't anymore.
What?
I feel as if it's no longer my target.
Because they rejected your pilot.
No, that's not the reason!
Well, they have some problems with their comedy output, BBC Three. Maybe some people might say, you know, problems, the wrong word, controversy.
Right.
Horn and cordon, stuff like that, you know.
It does very well, though.
It does very well, but some people are angry about it. But I tell you what they do very well
mm-hmm.
is youth documentaries.
Oh, yes.
They do really good youth documentaries that go on for hours. Like, there was one something called Man or Chicken or something, testing the prowess of young men. That went on for, it seemed to go on in sort of 2 hour segments. But because there's no commercial breaks, they can do really satisfying sort of teen documentaries. And they seem to have a thing going. I think they might be working in consort with the government. They seem to be making a documentary about every single teenager in Britain. Uh-huh. One by one, going through the entire populace and kind of trying to fix them.
Yeah.
They're starting with the most idiotic ones. I think Channel 4 might have started this, actually, and BBC 3 have now taken over the kind of task. I love that kind of thing. Yeah. I love a documentary about a really endearingly thick teenager who kind of has to come face to face with their problems. There was another one on BBC 3 called... I can't remember any of the names, but people who were like addicted to junk food and they were taken to see the junk food manufactured, who were like addicted to label clothing and they were taken to Indonesia to see the sweatshops where the clothing was made, stuff like that. Anyway, there was one on the other day called Young, Dumb and Living Off Mum.
Uh-huh.
And they took a group of teenagers who were particularly dumb and dependent on their parents, stuck them in a big house and gave them tasks. And the winner was going to be the one that was the most adult, who'd grown up the most by the end.
And how long were they in there for?
Weeks and weeks and weeks.
Weeks and weeks and weeks.
Yeah. But every episode was about an hour and a half, and it was very satisfying. No commercial breaks. You could get really absorbed in their trials.
So it's like a condensed Big Brother.
Yeah, it was extraordinary. And they came across an amazing girl, aged about 18, called Danielle, who looked like sort of the ghost of a young Vanessa Feltz. She'd done her face up to look really weirdly pale.
Yeah.
And had huge blonde hair, and she was very, very ditzy, but in a really entertaining and kind of charming way. One of the tasks she was given was to go into a primary school, teach the kids a history lesson, and then perform a play based on that history lesson at the end of the day to the students and pupils. So the subject Danielle chose to do the play on was the tragic death of Princess Diana.
Nice subject.
Now, she was 18, so she must have been about 5 or 6 when that actually happened, the terrible tragedy. So she can be excused for not knowing too many of the details of what happened, right?
Yeah.
But she did some online research to back up her facts. But despite her online research, she still got some of the, you know, hard, cold truths of Diana's accident a bit wrong. Here's a clip of her, a little bit of one of her lessons. Listen to this.
Right. How did Princess Diana tragically die? Yeah?
She crashed into the Eiffel Tower. Her car crashed into the Eiffel Tower.
That is correct. Well done.
It would have been better, don't you think, if she'd crashed right into the Eiffel Tower?
And the top had just toppled down.
I mean, not better in any other way, but, you know, more.
Obviously, no.
Yeah.
More prosaic, less... oh, dear.
So she gets a bit embarrassed about that. A teacher intercedes and tries to correct the facts.
Yeah.
And listen to Danielle kind of trying to come to terms emotionally with the impact that the crash must have had on, you know, Diana's family. Listen to this bit.
That must have hit her son bad, mustn't it?
Whoa. I mean, that is, if you're taking the temperature of the nation's youth, that's a pretty savage indictment. Can we just hear that one more time?
That must have hit her son bad, mustn't it?
Bad one.
Mustn't it?
Who's she talking? Hit her son bad.
Had a terrible impact on her children.
Right.
Is what she's saying.
Must have hit her son
but
bad.
But that's okay. You know, she's emotionally engaging with it. Then, so then she kind
that's
of
what, maybe she was rendered inarticulate by the emotion.
Exactly. So she corrals the kids together. They start rehearsing their play about the death of Diana, and there's still a couple of factual inaccuracies. This is the kids going through the cast list. This is them describing who's in the car when the crash happens.
Welcome to the Princess Diana show. Princess Diana died in a tragic car accident by a murderer.
This is the car driver for Princess Diana.
This is
Diana's husband.
This is
the murderer.
So Prince Charles is in the car.
Yeah.
And also the murderer is in the car.
I mean, this is a good idea for a series in itself, though, isn't it?
Just getting
children to do half-remembered versions of history.
Well, I always thought the news would be better staged by kids.
Yeah.
Just generally. But that's, you know, little kids, they've got a really positive attitude to murder.
Yeah, that murderer. Well, it's exciting. They love all that stuff. They love war and the army and all that kind of miserable stuff.
So you would have thought someone might have interceded there and explained to Danielle that, you know, the whole murder thing is a pretty unsubstantiated conspiracy theory that's probably not true. And even if it was true, it's doubtful the murderer would actually be sitting in the car, and also that Charles wasn't in the car, etc.
And they didn't crash into the Eiffel Tower.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But so here's the final performance of the Diana show. This is the finished play. I think BBC Three might have cut around this a little for taste and decency purposes.
No.
But when all the kids giggle, what's happening on screen is they're performing the crash. Okay, that's just a little note. But here's the finished production of Danielle's Diana show.
Wow.
Welcome to the Princess Diana show.
Princess Diana gets into the car.
Hurry up, I'm going to be late!
Daddy! No!
It's a diving hole!
Princess Diana is dead.
The end.
I mean, it's...
That's how I remember it.
It's sort of amazing, though, isn't it, that just over 10 years later, that kind of thing is being screened.
Well, it's a terrifying sort of... warning of how factual inaccuracy can very quickly become dangerous historical revisionism.
That's true, that's exactly what
you know
it is.
This is why facts are important, because very quickly the inaccuracies pass down the generations.
Yeah,
but that's quite moving, isn't it?
That is a sobering little piece of documentary there. Thank you very much for bringing it to our attention.
Pleasure. Text the Nation listeners, this week is all about cinema rules. You know, we're putting together a cinema manifesto that we're going to issue to all major cinemas in the British Isles. And if they don't obey it, then Black Squadron are going to perform a top secret operation to bring them down.
I thought you were going to say perform a topless ballet.
Well, they might do that as well.
That would be nice.
That's just for us, though.
So what kind of stuff have we got coming in?
We've got some very good ideas coming in from the listeners, Adam.
Yep,
okay. I'll read some out to you right now.
Why don't you do that, John?
Okay,
that'd be great.
Go. Now, go. Here's one from Paul Gledhill in Maidenhead. He says, all popcorn should be pre-crushed or chewed so as not to be so loud.
That is not practical, Paul.
Come on, it's good. So you'd order popcorn, and then the guy behind the counter, £2.50, please. And then he'd eat it.
He'd chew it up and feed it to you like a bird.
Yeah, then regurgitate it back into like a paper tub.
Like a bird feeding its little chicks.
I mean, it would take time, and it would be physically revolting.
Like Jim Carrey.
And it would render the popcorn inedible.
Yeah.
But... it would reduce the crunching noise in the auditorium.
It seems like a fairly extreme thing to do just to...
Well, it's being considered for the manifesto.
Here's the thing. Here's the problem I foresee, right? And this, tell me if this is being too niggly. I don't think most people would like to have popcorn, to eat popcorn that's already been eaten and regurgitated by a guy.
Well, they're disease-free. It's okay. They'd be checked for disease.
Oh, would they?
The staff before, yeah. They'd be medically clean, so it's fine.
That's fine. That's a good idea.
Good
then,
idea.
Paul.
Here's another one from Matt in Lancaster. Cinemas should not show adverts that are also on TV.
Uh-huh.
Now, this is that's a good idea, don't you think?
Yes.
This is for the single reason that people still laugh at the inanity, consequently ruining the experience for everyone. I think it diminishes the cinema-going experience anyway, because it somewhere in the back of your head, it reduces the grand, wonderful dream portal that is the cinema screen into drags it down to the same level as the telly.
Yes, exactly. No, it's nice to have a unique cinema-going experience, to see ads there that you wouldn't see anywhere
else.
So
that's a good rule. That's definitely a good candidate for the manifesto. Here's another very good one from Gary Chamberlain. Cinemas should have headphone sockets in the seats, like they have on airlines. I can never understand why they've never done this. It can't be that expensive. It beats listening to some cretinous 15-year-old on his phone or someone behind you guzzling nachos at deafening volume.
It probably is that expensive, though, wouldn't you think?
It's just a couple of little wires.
Yeah, but that would be expensive.
I'll do it.
Really? You go around and fit them all? I mean, it's a brilliant idea.
It's a good idea.
You have the little quarter-inch jack socket there.
Yes.
And so you can just bring in your own headphones.
Yeah. Surround sound
you
headphones
have to
as well.
Hire headphones or buy them or anything like that. You can just plug them in.
Because if 3D takes off, everyone, you know, people might have their own glasses. Mm. They're talking about doing that. You'll buy your, you know, some Ray-Ban 3D specs.
Right.
So why not go the whole hog and have the headphones as well? You could have them built into the glasses, right? Here's one. I'm trying to find a really good one.
That's Joe filling, listeners. I should have filled for him, but I just wanted to listen.
Got it now. I'm there now. This is from Tom in Loughborough. That's just a bit for free. Hi, Dr. Buckles and Mr. Cornballs. When the film is on, the cinema should be engulfed in utter darkness. The only light in the room should be from the projector. A lot of multiplexes leave the lights on these days, and I don't like having my film experience ruined when I accidentally look down and catch a glimpse of my stupid legs and knees.
That's true. And, you know, that's one thing that's very different when you go abroad and when you're on the continent and in the States. They plunge you into total darkness.
They've got much hairier knees as well, so they're less light reflective.
Exactly, and you can get up to all sorts of different things in the cinema there.
It's true. It's health and safety mad Britain.
It absolutely
isn't it? Darkness is illegal, right? It's illegal for it to be dark.
It's nice. I like it to be so dark that you stumble around, you break a few people's feet and stuff like that, press your hands into their faces. And definitely, and sometimes if you're unlucky enough to get sat right underneath one of the very bright lights there, or an exit sign, emergency exit sign. Sometimes they give out more light than the sun.
Disgusting. One more last one.
Yeah.
This is from Dave and Mike. This has taken two brains to concoct. Hi, Adam and Joe. Seats should be magnetized to stop people going to the toilet more than once and to stop people leaving 5 minutes from the end. Uh-huh. Each seat should have a noise sensor. And if someone makes too much noise, an electric shock is delivered. We like your thinking, Dave and Mike. The kind of thing we like.
A little bit woolly, though, isn't it?
Well, flesh isn't magnetic.
Well, that's the thing.
So how would you actually...
Unless you insert metal plates in people's buttock area.
As they enter the cinema.
Yeah, make them eat like a lead snack.
That would be doable, wouldn't it? I think insert them into the buttocks.
An iron snack.
I mean, there's no nerve endings there, are there? Just an incision at the top of each buttock, slip in the plate.
To avoid slipping plates into people's bottom area.
Stitch it up.
Wouldn't it be better just to have little wee-wee bags on the seats?
No, it wouldn't be better.
Come on.
I mean, you know bladder capacity is related to height.
Is it?
I read that the other day.
No, you never.
Yes, shorter people have smaller bladders.
Is that true?
Yeah.
That certainly applies to me, yeah.
So maybe smaller people should go towards the back.
A little wee bag. What's wrong with a wee bag?
What do you do with it after? People in the cinema, because it's dark, people think they have carte blanche to drop things on the floor.
I mean, it would be bad if you got it confused with your Pepsi.
They dropped it on the floor, then the other bloke gets up to go to the loo and steps on it and it bursts.
Well, you somehow build it into the seat.
Right.
And then
well, why not go
tube?
The whole Bunwellian hog and just have lavvy seats?
What is it with you and hogs?
I'm crazy about hogs.
Go all the way over all
My
these hogs.
My favourite film is Wild Hog.
I'm a funny person, I often make up jokes. My jokes are more amusing than those of other folks. When you hear my joke, I think you'll find that you agree. Come on, you're all invited to a made-up joke party.
Yeah, made-up jokes, listeners, is the part of the show where we ask you to send us your made-up jokes. It couldn't be simpler, really, but they do have to be made up. They have to be things you've invented. They can't be jokes you heard a long time ago and now think you made up. They've got to be really creative and created. And we have got a bank of experts here at the Big British Castle that vet all of these jokes, apply various stringent algorithms to them, and only the made-up ones get through.
Stringent algorithms.
I've always wanted to say that.
Here's one from Robin in Manchester. He says, my wife Wendy has made up this terrible, terrible joke. So he's palming it off immediately on Wendy there.
Wendy.
Worst of all, she seems really pleased with herself. This tends to happen. If you make up a joke, generally it's a good feeling.
Whenever someone says their wife's called Wendy, I just always picture the husband like lolloping around the house with an axe.
Oh,
Wendy!
I thought you were going to say like...
Poor Wendy looking really timid and frightened in a corner.
I thought you were going to say you hear that she's called Wendy and you picture the husband flying around in green tights.
Yes.
Like Peter Pan.
No, I don't.
That's what I picture. Anyway, here's Wendy's joke. This is about... she basically says... It's not even in the form of like a joke.
Good, good.
A promiscuous bird keeps singing Frank Sinatra songs...
Oh, dear.
Egrets, I've had a few.
Look, so our beautiful assistant, Xanthi, is putting her head in her hands.
That's quite good.
She is chuckling.
Good job, Wendy. Have you got one there, Joe?
Yeah, I've got one here from Jim in Chesterfield. The other week, a Native American friend of mine ran out of coffee filters and was forced to use his shoe to brew up.
Upon hearing this, the local beverage-loving priest described it as a moccasin. Moccasin. A moccasin.
I like the fact that it's he has to wangle in the fact that he's the beverage-loving priest.
Yeah, yeah, that's good. The more unbalanced they are, the better. That's good, Jim.
A moccasin.
You know, nobody laughed.
No.
So it's not that good.
Well, no, it is good because
it's
we were
a good effort.
Happy. It made us happy.
It didn't make us happy.
And yeah, sometimes happiness depressed. Is about more than mere...
Just laughing.
Laughter.
Yeah.
Here's one from... who's this from? This is anonymous. Well, you'll understand why when you hear it. My made-up joke goes like this. So I hear Amy... I like the conversational ones.
Yes. So?
So, I hear Amy Winehouse has cancelled her tour of Saudi Arabia.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah? Yeah. They tried to make her go to Riyadh, but she said no, no, no. Oh, that's from Joe, it says at the end there. Not you, Joe.
No.
They tried to make her go to Riyadh.
That's good, isn't it?
Because it sounds a bit like Riyadh.
A little bit like it. Tiny bit like it. Here's one from Adam in Saffron Walden. What do you call a heavy metal band that has to really meticulously set up their instruments and make sure everything is neat and tidy on stage? OCDC.
That's good.
Is that made up?
That's too good, maybe. That's too good.
Is that too good?
OCDC.
If you've got... Have you got more?
I got one more. Check this out, right? This is from Sean Curtis. A group of chess players were standing in the lobby discussing their recent tournament victories. After about an hour, the manager came out of the office and asked them to disperse. But why? They asked as they moved off. Because, said the manager, I can't stand chestnuts boasting in an open foyer.
That's good. That is very good.
That is good, Sean Curtis.
We should have saved that one for Crinklemas.
I mean, that's amazing.
Brilliant.
We can haul that one out at Christmas again. Oh, people brilliant. Will have forgotten.
If you've got a made-up joke and you have to have thought of it yourself... And the way to make that clear is for the joke to be really pretty awful and tortured, but for there to be some structural thing happening in it.
Because I can't stand chestnuts boasting in an open foyer is not in most joke books that you're going to open.
Then send your joke to adamandjoe.sixmusic@bbc.co.uk, and every single joke we read out will win nothing.
Will win absolutely nothing, but it will save the life of a fairy.
Ouch! Podcast, crazy sexy fun, coming out of my computer down my headphones. Too many ears, two guys from England just talking about things. Oh my gosh, what's the point of all this stuff? I don't know.
Got some good made-up jokes coming in already on the text, but a lot of people are complaining there that the chess one is not a made-up joke. It's an oldie, and we do rely on our listeners to out liars.
What? I don't believe that's an oldie.
Three or four people have texted in and say it's... One person says it's been on TV before. It's a fairly famous one that's even been on TV.
Chestnuts boasting in an open foyer.
Yes.
Sean Curtis, get in touch, for goodness sake, defend your good name.
I mean, maybe if we did find, you know, if we proved that someone had deliberately lied, then we could get them into the studio and get some Black Squadron members in and have a live punishment.
Tickle.
A tickle. I mean, tickling can be dangerous.
Wow.
We'll have to check the castle rules.
We've already established that if Black Squadron tickle you, it could be deadly.
Well, they're above the law.
Exactly.
They can tickle you
on the NFI,
ATL.
On the Butox.
Mm.
But what if there was some people from the cinema we were talking about earlier that had steel plates in their Butox?
Then they wouldn't be sensitive to the tickling.
They would be immune from the tickling.
Yeah.
Anyway, we can deal with this later on. But yeah, keep your jokes coming in, especially through the week. You know, if you're listening to the podcast as well and you want to keep some coming in there, then make sure you do so. That was pretty slick, wasn't it? Now, I've been reading a book by Roald Dahl to my children recently. And, you know, Roald Dahl continues to be a favourite author for children all over the world.
Well done, Roald.
Did you like Ronald, as I used to call him?
Yeah, I used to love Ronald.
Did you ever read Danny Champion of the World?
That's one I never read, no.
Well, it was one that was always talked about by my contemporaries at school, and I never read it myself when I was growing up. But I remembered our friend Mark particularly saying how much he loved it, and I thought, oh yeah, I should read that. I should get that for the boys. And it's sort of oddly dated because it's about a father and son who are involved with poaching pheasants, right? Mm. One way or another, and they kind of gang up against this nasty local landowner and teach him a lesson by doing some poaching shenanigans. But the backbone of the story is the relationship between the
father... I'm seeing Mel Smith.
as the local landowner.
Yeah.
Well, there was a film adaptation of it.
With an actor and his son, was it?
I think Jeremy Irons was in one film adaptation.
Yeah, and his real son played Danny, didn't he?
Possibly. Anyway, I haven't seen the film, but in the book, the relationship between the father and the son is absolutely key. And it's it's sort of utopian depiction of what that relationship might be. Mm. So as a father reading this to your sons, you're forced to feel a little bit like you're coming up short as a father when you're reading it, right?
Well, why? What kind of things is Roald saying?
Well, just the things that, I mean, the extent to which the son idolizes his father, because the book is told from the point of view of Danny, the son, right? And he just talks nonstop about how perfect his father is the whole time. The mother is dead in the book, so it's just him and his dad living in this caravan.
So she's off the hook.
She's off the hook, no problem. It's all on the dad. And they just live in this caravan. They don't have a TV or anything, no sort of serious mod cons. They just live this life totally disconnected from DSs and tellies and all those other things.
Well, it was written probably in the 70s, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. But so they just make up their own entertainment, and every day is a wonderful roller coaster ride of wonder and fantastical things, thanks to Danny's dad. And as I was reading it, like I was sort of embarrassed reading it to my son, because I fell so far short of this ideal that had been set up by Roald Dahl. So what I've done is I'm going to read you like a paragraph from the book, a real paragraph from Danny, Champion of the World, and then you have to see where I've slightly added the reality of my own fatherhood onto the end.
Mm.
Okay? So here's a bit from Danny, Champion of the World by Roald Dahl. I really loved those morning walks to school with my father. We talked practically the whole time. Mostly, it was just he who talked and I who listened, and just about everything he said was fascinating. He was a true countryman. The fields, the streams, the woods, and all the creatures who lived in these places were a part of his life. Although he was a mechanic by trade, and a very fine one, I believe he could have become a great naturalist if only he had had good schooling. Long ago, he had taught me the names of all the trees and the wild flowers, and all the grasses that grow in the fields. All the birds, too, I could name, not only by sighting them, but by listening to their calls and their songs. Then one day, my father was arrested for poaching and was placed in the care of a short, stocky man with a beard, who insisted I call him either Buckules or Dr. Buckles, although he was not really a doctor. He said that he didn't have time to walk me to school because he was working on important jingles, and from now on he would drive me instead. I tried to ask him the names of the trees and plants we passed as we drove, but he couldn't tell me what a single one was called. Often he was unsure which were actually trees. I asked him what kind of engine his car had, and he said he thought the car took diesel and that it was silver, but that was it. I asked him about politics, and he started mumbling about everything being Al Gore's fault. After a few days, the conversation ran out altogether, and we sat in silence on the trips to school. Then one morning, he emerged from the house brandishing a shiny disc, which he thrust into the car's CD player. He turned to me and said, "I've made us a simply marvellous compilation to listen to in the car, Danny. There's some B-sides by Dirty Shirty and the Buggernauts, and there's a few live tracks by Jimmy Big Nuts, Pointy Pinger and Jihadaway. I think this is going to be the most wonderful trip to school you've ever taken." I opened the car door and ran and ran, and I didn't stop running until I was far, far away. Could you tell where the real story changed and where I came in there?
No. It was so... The transition was so smooth.
You wait till you're a father and you read Danny, Champion of the World. You will feel a little bit on the guilty side, I can guarantee.
It's dramatic opposites, though, isn't it? Because he's a poacher, he's a criminal.
Mm-hmm.
So, but he's a brilliant, lovely criminal.
He's a noble criminal.
So that works well dramatically. But whereas you are a lazy father who doesn't care as much about his... No, I have to word this carefully.
Yeah, you
do. But you present yourself as a lazy father who's more interested in his own concerns.
You know, the thing that worried me...
those of the children.
The thing that worried me most was the fact that the names of the trees and the birds and stuff like that, you know?
So what would work for you is if you didn't have kids and then you were shouldered with some relative's kids, you know, that would then be a good thing and you were forced to learn about parenthood.
Yeah, but why can't the children be interested in Einstürzende Ende Neubauten and stuff like that? I could tell them all sorts of things about
that. That's what kids are for. To destroy you, to kill you.
Yeah, there you go.
We're just a couple of guys talking to each other. We've been friends since we were young. I am like your brother, and you are like my sister, a shy and scaredy girl.
pale and thin and trembling and frightened of the world. But don't worry, little sister, I'll take care of you. I will laugh at your jokes, I'll help you to the loo. We'll get together once a week and broadcast our conversations. And it will be quite similar to other radio stations, but slightly sloppier.
Now, we promised last week that we were going to canvass suggestions for a Song Wars subject from you, the listeners. They poured into our blog, and we have made our decision. But shall we tell people what kind of things were suggested?
Yeah, we had lots of fantastic suggestions on the blog. Here is, for instance, one that Gary Socrates sent in. He wanted us to do a song about our favourite animal in the zoo in the style of a 70s prog rock band. This could then be developed into a concept album along the lines of Pictures at an Exhibition, except about monkeys, for instance. That is an idea that we rejected.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
We thought it was no good.
It's insanely complicated.
It's good, no, but we didn't think it was no good. We thought it was brilliant, but it was too much for us.
Yeah.
Here was one from Mike Murr. He says, I think a sea shanty would be great. I've got no specific themes in mind. I'd just love to hear you do a sea shanty, a little accordion, perhaps some seagull noises to complete the scene.
Well, I've got a melodica, and that would be good for a sea shanty, I think. I like that suggestion.
There were some very good suggestions. Here was one of my favourite ones, even though this didn't make it. Derek Boland wanted a fantasy face-off. He wanted one of us to play the role of Hoggle from Labyrinth and another to play the role of Dobby from Harry Potter, Dobby the House Elf, and then they would both throw songs insulting their masters. To quote, he says they would throw insults back and forth about whose master is the bigger Ponce, Jareth, the Goblin King from Labyrinth, or Harry Potter from Harry Potter. Is he really called Jareth?
Jareth. That would make sense. What a
like
terrible
a mix
name.
Between Jared and Gareth.
Jareth.
And he wanted that sung in a light opera Gilbert and Sullivan style. I mean, that's a good idea. We might store that one up in the memory box.
And is he definitely Hoggle, not Coggle?
No, you were saying Coggle, I think. What were we saying? We got it wrong.
I can't remember.
We?
It's blended in my mind. We got rapped on the knuckles before for confusing Hoggle and Coggle.
But listen, here is the one we have chosen. And this was sent in by Rufus Blacklock. And he wrote, please, Adam and Joe, I need some bath time songs for when I'm in the bath. Perhaps reggae, like Under the Sea in The Little Mermaid. Uh-huh. Please make them bubbly, splooshy, and all watery. Thanks, says Rufus. So that had a simplicity that appeals to Adam and I, even though, do you think we're going to come up with quite similar songs?
Probably, yeah.
And there's a limited set of experiences
the
in the bath.
The bath time songs.
Yeah. I think we should try and push ourselves away from the more obvious bath references. Or maybe not. Maybe
really?
Just let it.
Why don't you push yourself away from the obvious?
And you go for it. Yeah, you're right.
I was thinking, because the big decision is who you are in the bath. Are you going to be just yourself, or you could be anyone in the bath?
You could be a special person having a bath.
I was.
A David's having a bath.
I'm running the bath, and it's bubbling over my bits. I was.
Hey, come on, we don't play them till next week. Yeah. That, you know, that would do. As far as I'm concerned,
that's what we're going to go with. Sometime between now and next week, we are going to write songs about bath.
And yeah, we'll be playing those next week if all goes according to plan. Thank you very much, Rufus, and thanks to everyone who put suggestions on our blog. If you want to visit our blog, it's at bbc.co.uk/blogs/Adam and Joe, and it's a reciprocal for all of your relevant waffle.
A reciprocal?
Yeah.
Receptacle?
Receptacle, oh God. I'm going all Jareth.
You're going all Jareth on the listeners' arses.
Text the nation, text the nation. What if I don't want to? Text the nation. I've got a music email.
Is that a problem?
Text the nation. Who wanna do it? Go on and do it all right.
He sings nation, nation.
It's Adam and Joe.
Oh, there we go. It's because of his regional accent.
He's a Geordie.
I like it generally when words are sung funny to make them fit a tune.
Uh-huh.
Do you know what I mean? Slightly mispronounced to make them fit a tune.
Sunshine.
I did a jingle for this show the other day that I never brought in because I ended up, to fit it into the beat, I ended up singing Adam and Joe on the BBC. Because I said BBC. I just thought I can't You're have a jingle that says BBC.
I've got some new jingles for the podcast this week that are a tiny bit on the embarrassing side.
Are they?
Yeah. You have to listen to the podcast, though, to find
out. That was very good. Who was that by there?
That was Unusually Sincere. And that was not a reworking of our existing jingle, but an entirely new take on the whole Text the Nation.
Who's the chap what done that?
Alex Haddam.
There you go.
Thanks, Alex.
Anyway, so Text the Nation this week is all about a cinema manifesto we're putting together. We want your new rules for behaviour and etiquette at cinemas that we're going to impose on all cinemas in the British Isles. Otherwise, they'll be subverted in a way we haven't thought of yet by Black Squadron. So here are some good suggestions.
What's the pirate? The pirate and then the Phil in quick succession.
Wow, what a great moment.
It's Pirate Phil.
Michelle and Ian, in their conservatory in rainy Bolton, they say the following. People used to clap or cheer when the British Board of Film Classification information came on the screen as it signalled the start of the film. I remember this fondly and still give a quiet little cheer even now. Please make this mandatory in your manifesto.
I agree. The
whole audience must go...
Because I still, when that logo comes up on the screen, I still reach across and grab the arm of whoever I'm with and give them a little thumbs up.
A frisson of
Here
excitement.
Here we go! Harry
Hold
Potter!
Tight. Strap yourselves down for 2.5 hours of
pointless noise.
Here is another one that comes from Amanda and Liam. They say, cinema passport. You get a unique stamp for every film seen, so you have a record. It's a way to show off, plus screen potential friends and outliers. Quite a good idea. You have a passport. When you see a film, they stamp it on the way in.
Uh-huh.
So you'd end up with a book. Is that the film you've seen?
What was the last bit there?
Have you seen the film?
Have you seen? Oh, I got my passport.
Can I take off that, huh?
Oh, I got my passport.
Here's one from Eggman from East Kilbride. Adam and Joe, my input to the manifesto is regarding armrests on seats.
Uh-huh.
Cinemas should provide armrests for each seat rather than some kind of communal one between each seat. This causes unacceptable levels of elbow jostling and awkwardness if you've got a stranger on one side of you.
It's true.
If this is unworkable, then people should only be allowed to rest their elbow on the armrest to their right, where the drink holder is. Failure to comply should be punished with amputation.
Oh, dear.
I have a similar thing. I was in the cinema the other day and a man came and sat next to me and he put his arm on the same rest as mine and the little hairs on his arm were like daintily touching my arm.
Your bare
hairs.
Arm?
Yeah. And it was at once sexy and utterly revolting.
And did he just leave it there?
Yeah, well, it was kind of like a challenge. It was like a little fairy light challenge along my hairy arm.
As soon as I get any stranger flesh contact, I withdraw it.
Withdraw. Well, that's what he wanted me to do. But I thought, oh, yeah, that's the game you're playing, are you?
Yeah.
So the way to go is to sort of caress back.
So the hairs on your arm stood up and started intermingling with his.
I just plunged my hand into his inner thigh and started tickling.
And then reached round to the Butox but found they were encased in metal.
Yes. Tim in Chelty says, using a seat for coats is all right, but it must be paid for.
That's just from the cinema manager.
Matt in Sheffield says, when a rat runs across your feet, as happened to me in the Leicester Square Odeon, the management are to refund the price of your ticket, not argue with you that it's hard for them with rats because they're so close to the underground.
Good old Leicester Square. That used to happen in the Scala. Do you remember that?
Yeah. You know, rats in cinema is good. Well, they used to have a cat in the Scala in London's King's Cross that would eat all the rats. And finally, from Ross Smith, there should be a remote control to let you watch another film if the whole audience agrees. Just like in Britain's Got Talent, everyone presses a button when they're bored. There's a big cheer when it's the majority.
Wow. If that was up to Cornballs, you'd be fast-forwarding to the good bits, wouldn't you?
What?
That's your technique.
Is it?
When we sit down to watch DVDs sometimes, you're like, oh, this is a boring bit. And you skip to the good parts. Well, you used to. Maybe you've matured since
Maybe.
Then.
Maybe.
That was the end of the so-called highlights from this week's Six Music Radio Show. Now there's just a little time left for one final linky from the two baboon men that you call Adam and Joe.
There you go. That's it for the podcast this week, listeners. We hope you enjoyed it.
You know what is a glaring omission of the podcast, not only this week, but the last as well?
Retro Text the Nation.
Retro TTN.
Now, this was a segment we used to have before our summer break, where we packaged together some contributions that had come in from podcast and listen again listeners on the subject of the previous weekend's Text the Nation. And basically, by doing it, we were playing slightly fast and loose with some hardcore castle rules.
Yeah.
Right?
About how much new content you can have in podcasts. Yeah. So I think what we're going to do, because we still would really like to find a way to get you podcast-only listeners to contribute to the program, is we're going to include RetroTextination in the live show, which will then be included in the podcast, we hope, if it's of sufficient quality.
So, yeah, if the subject of the Textination in this podcast provokes you into wanting to respond, then please send your response in and it might turn up in Retro Textination in next week's live show and podcast, if that makes any sense.
The address, as usual, for submissions, emails only, please, during the week, is adamandjoe@bbc.co.uk.
Yes.
Well, yes, after two disgraceful attempts.
That's good. Well done. So send your thoughts and contributions into that address. And that's it. There'll be a Song Wars on next weekend's show. I'm worried about the Song Wars.
I know. There's a lot to do this week.
Heavy week.
I've got a gig in Greenwich this week. If you're coming along to see me, can't wait to see you there, listeners.
I mean, I'm working all day, every day.
Yeah.
Into the evening. And then I've got to eat and sleep and wash.
Yeah.
And I've also got to write a flipping song.
Well.
And I'm quite competitive.
You are, aren't you?
Yeah, so what's going to happen?
And it's Bath as well. It's quite an open subject, so you could really go anywhere.
Well, it seems easy now, but when we actually come down to it, it might be a real old assault course.
Have you got any ideas in your locker already?
Not really. I tell you what. Do you remember the Adam and Joe book we published in about the year 1999?
That's basically got all the ideas we've ever had in it.
I wrote a page about going to the bath.
Yeah.
Going to the bath? Is that
having
how you
bath.
Say it? I'm going to say go to the bath. That's going to the bath.
I think that's got our cinema ideas in there as well.
Exactly.
Like Cinema Manifesto. Basically,
it's the secret lost runes.
That's all we do is go back to that book and regurgitate everything in there for this show. Mm. That's our secret.
Luckily,
it's
out of print.
Luckily, it is out of print. That's right.
You have to pay about £50 to buy it on eBay.
Yeah, if you're insane.
And who would do that?
Have a good week, listeners. Take care of yourselves and each other. Brush your teeth. Wash your hands, stop the spread of the swine flu pandemic. Try not to read too many Lady Brain rotting magazines if you're a lady. Stay away from the pink tops. Oh, for goodness sake. Can we just end it? Help me end this.
You were said goodbye and then you started another sentence.
I know, but then I got into trouble.
I'm trying to let you learn. I'm just trying to let you learn by your own mistakes. If I help you all the time, how will you ever learn?
That's true, isn't it? Thanks, teacher. Thanks, Guru Cornish.
Yeah, that's quite a good angle, isn't it?
Cheerio, listeners.
See you next week. Bye.
Bye.
If you enjoyed the Adam and Joe podcast, then why not try the John Richardson podcast? Download it now. bbc.co.uk/6music.
It's a beautiful day out there, mate.
It's lovely.
You going surfing later?
Of course I'm going surfing.
Have you waxed your tinny board?
Board? My tinny board's all completely hairless.
Yeah, beautiful.
Lovely.
What kind of a wave are you hoping for?
One of the wavy curly ones.
Oh, they're my favourite, mate.
I like to... what I like to do, Adam,
is
I like to surf right out and wait for a big one to come along. And then what I do is I stand up on my surfboard and I surf down the middle of the wave.
Yeah.
I call it a tube. It resembles a tube.
I call it that too.
Yeah, I surf down the middle.
A beautiful.
And then what
tube.
Tends to happen is photographers take photos of me.
Right.
And cameramen... take pictures of me.
Moving
and
pictures.
They put me in documentaries
great,
about
mate.
Sexy surfers.
You know what? I've got a little camera mounted on the tip of my board.
Have you, mate?
Yeah.
Do you put the footage on YouTube?
Yeah, I do.
Oh, brilliant.
And it's super, super fast. It takes like about 1,000 frames a minute.
One time I was surfing and I fell off my board.
Wow. Wild. What happened?
Nothing else.
Did you get back on?
I did.
Mate.
I paddled. What? I paddled back into the shore.
You paddled? Were you on a bike?
Had a bit of a sit down. It's gone South African.
Had to sit down on the beach, mate. Did you? And you paddled in. You were on a bike.
Yes.
Did you use a bike?
No, I was on a surfboard, mate.
You said you paddled.
Where are you from?
I don't know.
Adam and Joe on 6 Music.